Everyone, welcome to Free Kick, the AFLW Fantasy Podcast. We are once again doing a team preview in the preseason, and today I'm joined by Liam as we chat through the Melbourne Demons. Liam, how's it going?
I'm going very well. This Melbourne Demons squad has really thrown up some unique challenges. They have seen more turnover this year than I reckon they've ever had in their history, and it's made trying to find fantasy relevant options a real tough task.
Yeah, it made me think of my favourite, I don't know what you call it, mind problem, Theseus's ship, about rebuilding all the planks and is it still the same club? This is one I think about often. But when you've got this old premiership winning club that's had some really key players and then so many of them depart and you have, you know, nine players come in, is it still the same club? Are they still a finals club going into season 9 or 2024?
I really don't know. I think of all the top four teams, they are quite comfortably the team most likely to regress. Yeah, like you said, they have nine new players and this is the same team that the year prior lost basically no one after winning a premiership, which is unfathomable.
So it does make it very interesting from a fantasy perspective because we've had a bit of changeover. So why don't you run us through some of these ins and outs?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the main place I need to go is the traded out players because it's an absolute doozy of a list. So you've got Eliza West, who has been a midfielder basically her entire last three seasons. Casey Sheriff, a 26-year-old who's clearly been one of their more important players. She's played 48 career games. Libby Birch, who they themselves got traded from the Western Bulldogs, who's had 77 career games and is a stalwart in defence, multiple All-Australian. Then the final player that's a real big loss is Matty Gay, who has been a midfielder and a halfback and a wing for the Demons, and she's off to Essendon. So that core four players represents well in excess of 150 games worth of career experience, which in the context of the AFLW is absolutely massive, in a side that was bundled out pretty unceremoniously in the finals. They were the most dominant side for the first like 7 weeks of last year. And then they got beaten by North and Adelaide and they got figured out and then they did not win in the finals at all. They were bundled out in straight sets.
Yeah, it wasn't a great end for Melbourne. So that's a lot of players out, but what about some of their ins?
Well, this is a much shorter list of known quantities. So in terms of players that have previously been on the list, we've only got three. So Lily Johnson was signed or traded from Port Adelaide to Melbourne. Grace Hill was signed as a delisted player from GWS, a defender slash ruck. And then also Denby Taylor was signed as an injury replacement player. Now, she's not been on an AFLW list for a few years, but she was a very high draft pick from Geelong earlier in the AFLW kind of I think it was about 2020 or 2019. And then they had five draft picks, which is surely a record for Melbourne. So the names probably most important to know are Alyssa Pisano, who they took at pick five, and then possibly the most interesting story of the draft, Riley Wotherspoon, who was a player that I think had played like three games of football in her entire junior career because she'd been playing cricket and a bunch of other things, but had trained with Brisbane through the season and played a few games in the quaffle and had apparently looked amazing and has also kicked a few goals in the match simulation. So as much as I'd love to say they've managed to find amazing ways to replace all of their lost talent and experience, it's really a pretty bare cupboard for the ins at Melbourne this year.
Yeah, well, I mean, to get a little bit more insight on some of these new players and what's going to go on with Melbourne this year, Jono was very lucky to interview Eliza McNamara early in this preseason. And got to say, she's very well media trained. This is a particularly cagey responses, but still a very interesting interview. Let's throw over to that now.
All right. Well, welcome, Eliza. It's exciting to have you on the podcast. How are you going?
Yeah, very well. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here and congrats on it being the first official season of you guys being the major fantasy podcast.
Yeah, thanks. Really appreciate that. How have you found the return to preseason this year?
It's been different. It's definitely been longer just because we've been going from, I'm going to say Feb-ish in this unstructured pre-preseason. Obviously, there's been like breaks and not super formal initially, which was welcomed, and it just allowed you to kind of attend when you felt your best. And if you wanted to kick with the girls, it was always a good outlet. But otherwise, still had your break. And there were plenty of other ways you could have developed outside of footy in that time as well. So it was a good balance that the club struck then. And then officially being back since about June, it's flown now. Like, I feel like always when team photo day comes around, you come to realise the season's definitely on the horizon. So that was a couple of weeks ago for us. And now it's exciting to see that it's all about to come to fruition and the season's about to kick off.
Yeah, no, it's wild how long these preseasons are, because I feel like you've got such a short season and there's like such a long build up to it compared to what you had last season. I feel like the build up would have been so much smaller and easier, because, you know, back when you had that horrible incident in the gym and, you know, trying to return from that, that would have been such a long process. How would you compare this to that one?
Oh, well, that one was really different because I had to get my body back to where it was pre-injury. So it was interesting. At least that one was kind of different. I was like initially just really slow steps, and then it was bigger steps, and then it was just getting back to being able to function as an athlete, and then transitioning back into footy, and then transitioning back into contact with the team. So it was a lot more of a structured return to play, whereas this one I've been going, you know, full pelt with like mind and niggles throughout for the whole duration of it since about Feb. So been a lot of footy this time, whereas other times, returning from my back, there was like glute strengthening, like all different elements of your game that you don't really think about. So now that I get to do that unbeknowing to me, like I'm not, you know, focusing on switching on my glutes anymore because I've done that work previously. Now I can just focus on elements of my footy craft. It's actually been a lot more of a welcomed pre-season, a lot more enjoyable, a lot more footy, which has been good.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel for you. I'm going through some physio myself, and activating glutes is got to be the worst thing, honestly.
I know, it's an impossible so process. You don't realise the brain to muscle connection there. It's not super strong.
Well, look, I guess it was really nice that you got to be at least involved in the sidelines during that premiership season. But being back on the field last year, it seemed that Melbourne was sort of on track to defend that premiership. And then there was that unfortunate straight finals exit, which would have felt like a little bit of a letdown after, you know, being so on top of things throughout the season. How is the club reflecting on last season's finish?
Obviously we took some time to reflect on it initially, but I think the mindset has been like, well, what's important now? That's not important anymore. So like, how can we focus on this season? And obviously there's so many learnings to take away from those final series, and the coaches have done a mountain of work in the off season to make sure that all our drills and everything that we're doing at training is tailored specifically to that. I'm sure the nine new players that we have also been a part of that plan to make sure that doesn't happen again. So there's been plenty of work done behind the scenes that I wouldn't even know. But then even just from being a part of training and things like that, you start to see like, oh yeah, this is what we were missing in those final series, and now we're practicing it from the outset. So it's been good. I'm sure like a lot of it would have been a mindset thing. And then I think when you lose a first final, you know that you're on the back foot. And hopefully this season there's no back foot at any stage. And it's kind of like we can just keep going forward rather than kind of being like, oh, if we don't win this, we're out. So, definitely a mindset thing. And I think, again, that's something the group's worked hard on, how to engage as a team rather than, you know, individually getting stuck into your own thoughts.
Yeah, no, it's a good one. I feel like it's difficult to sort of stay out of your own head during games at times. And I imagine this year for you is going to be a very different mindset to last season with, you know, just returning to football was a big step, but now you've had a full season under your belt. Are you trying to focus on anything different this season compared to last individually?
Yeah, absolutely. Last season, I kind of forget that it was my first season back from my back. And I think I forgot throughout the season that was the case as well. And there was a lot of like, we're just trying to get you through every round this season, like rather than pushing it. And I think that's something hard for me to swallow. Like, obviously you want to go out there and every training session you want to be giving 100%, but you know, there's load management and things like that just to make sure that you can be available for a game. So I guess that's not as much of a factor this year. And so that's allowed me to do a lot more contest work and physical things at training, which hopefully will be an element of my game that has improved in pre-season and I can kind of bring from round one. Been one of the major focuses for me.
Yeah, no, it's good to hear. It has been nice seeing you back on the park.
But
one of the things you alluded to earlier was that you've had 9 new players on the list. I feel like this is the biggest turnover that the Ds have had in quite a few seasons. And we're pretty excited to see the opportunity for a lot of these younger new players to step into the team and play their role. I was wondering on your first impression, you had, I think, 5 draftees that you picked up. Very, very big intake. What have you made of their preseason so far?
Yeah, it's been massive for them. I think being drafted at the back end of that last year and then not having any official training until June could be an opportunity for players to kind of get a bit lost in that period. But I think the draftees that we've had and even some of the interstate girls that have come to join us have really used that those couple of months to bridge relationships and make sure they have like a baseline relationship with all the girls in the team, which just allows for that connection to flow. So I think from the outset, the new girls, the draftees, absolutely gave it 110% to make those connections. And then, that I think just allows them to feel a bit more comfortable at training and play like they normally would as an as a top ager in their 18 league. But then also the interstate girls, like they obviously have experience from coming from other clubs. So they were able to bring that kind of experience, but also they were able to connect with the new girls on that level as well. So I think they brought them along as well. And then it's also allowed kind of the younger girls in our group that were already here, like Georgia Gould, to really step up. And she's kind of become a leader amongst those girls, which is really awesome to see. And it's really fed into her footy as well. So I think beyond the 9 that we've got, there's definitely people that weren't playing last season consistently or playing at all who've really stepped up as well. Like Sarai Taylor's been unreal. So it'll be exciting to see. I think beyond the 9 new girls, there's actually a lot of change anyway amongst the initial list we had.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I feel like there's just little opportunities that have popped up on every line, which we can't really wait to see at all. One of the draftees in particular was the first you took in the draft, Alyssa Pisano, who seems in the talent league, she kicked 38 goals in 11 games, which is just an incredible return. I can't imagine how it's going to go with her slotting into what's already such a potent forward line. Is she someone that we're expecting to see in round one?
Yeah, I don't know. Liz is super exciting as a player. She's so dangerous, like ground level, so silky, very similar skill set to Hanksy, I'd say. So it's super exciting to see. And I guess having that specialised in the forward line opens up like vast opportunity, not just for herself, but to be able to be so strong at ground level and so clean, like we'll bring in plenty of the other forwards as well. So yeah, she's a massively exciting prospect, great human as well. She brings a lot to the group and yeah, she's super kind heart. So hopefully if all goes well for her, she'll be in the team, but you just never know really.
On the interstate players, you've also traded in Lily Johnson and Grace Hill coming from Port and GWS. What have you made of them coming into the club with a little bit of experience at other locations?
Yeah, so that's what I was kind of alluding to before. They've both made an immediate impact. They've come from AFLW programs and then slipped right in. Grace is just an awesome athlete. Like, she's come from a netball background and she's super determined, super hard at it, so strong in the back line. So she's been unreal and also a great person, like super personable, has an awesome story of like growing up. And then Lil as well, like a little bit younger, so she's able to connect with a lot of the draftees. But she's so silky and very, executes everything on field. So she's been an awesome addition as well. So, yeah, that's the tricky thing. There's so many good additions. It's just kind of like who's going to be fit, who's going to be available on the day, and what do the coaches see is the best mix of players to get the job done.
Yeah, I feel like there's been a few position changes thrown around, which we've heard about, which honestly, from the outside, they seem really exciting, but we're curious if they're true. There was an article in the AFLW website on Taylor Harris potentially moving back as an intercept marker. Is that something that we're going to see this season?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think she'll be more than just an intercept marker. I think she'll be a massive impact down back. So, I mean, anywhere Taylor plays, she executes so well. And I think she is just so open to adopting new roles and things like that. She was great forward. The club just said, like, what about backline? And she kind of was like, yep, whatever, train me up, make me the best back I can be. And she's really gone at that opportunity with open arms, and she's an incredible athlete anyway, no matter what position she plays. So I'm so excited to see how it turns out against other teams as well.
No, it's I feel like she's just got so many skills, so it's exciting to see her throw it around. I suppose when we look at a list which has got so many new players or younger players sort of stepping into the team, if you sort of jump to the other end of the scale, I think the D's have some of the most experienced players in the league. Some of the players that are, you know, we haven't talked about so far, Kate Hoare or Paxi Paxman, Lily Mithen, these people who, you know, all these premiership credentials amongst so many of your players. When you've got this junior and really experienced mix, is there anything that you're approaching differently on field just to sort of, you know, lead some of the younger players through how you do game plans and that?
There's been a lot of the group step up as just on-ground leaders, and without a title, with a title, it doesn't matter. There's been just a lot of guidance on field, like the back lines coaching each other, coaching the new people in the back line, the mids doing the same. Grace Beasley's come from America, so she's essentially relearning the game, and the mids have been massive in helping her fast track that. And then, yeah, having the likes of Ido and Kate and Bano in the forward line, the younger girls are just like blessed with knowledge there. So I think, yeah, it doesn't really matter where you look, there's kind of leaders all over the ground. And yeah, Pax is just an unbelievable leader in terms of what she brings in a footy sense, but what she brings off field is second to none. And then, yeah, I think Kate, she's been great since the moment she stepped into the role. I've never doubted her as leader or captain, and it's exciting to see that the whole group is behind her again this season. And then she's so well complimented by Hanksy. They're just a great pair. So yeah, I think we've got a great captain and vice captain, but then adding Paxi and Lampy to that leadership group, it's just like bolstered kind of the camaraderie in the group, and like everyone is able to connect with them. So it's a really safe group, and yeah, it's just, it's exciting, honestly.
Yeah, I feel like every time we get to hear Kate Hoare talk, because she's across so much of the media these days, I feel like she's just so composed and really well-spoken. So I can only imagine on the field how that would be. With her role this season, if you take Taylor Harris out of the forward line, is she likely to spend more time up forward, or is she going to keep that midfield mix that she does?
I don't even know, like, what I'm allowed to say, what I'm not allowed to say, but yes, there's so much, like, you just got to wait and see. Have a watch the D's. We need the viewership up anyway, so we can have more games. So maybe the less I reveal, the better for the AFLW. But yeah, we'll see. I don't know. It's obviously like subject to change anyway. Everything we try this season, I'm sure the coaches will analyse and look at intently. Is it working? Is it not? Where someone maybe be better suited to someone else? So I think it's all just trial and error until we figure out the mix, but hopefully we figure it out pretty early.
I guess lastly, one thing I'd love to know is just who have you been watching this preseason that has really stood out as, you know, they've had such a great preseason and you're excited to watch them in 2024?
God, it's hard to just pick any number. Like, even just if I was to pick a handful, it'd be so hard to condense it down to a handful. There's honestly, it's been awesome seeing. I think it's beyond the actual execution of footy on field. It's way more about, like, I think the group's so, I don't know, we rely a lot on like the heart of players, and I think that's really come through this season. There's not much individual pursuit for greatness. It's really team-based, which is really nice to see, and it's not fake. So I think there's been standouts in every line, and I don't know, I guess I've already spoken about Sarade Taylor. She's been massive down back. So was Grace Hill coming in. So they're two players that haven't played in the D's jumper that could play. Obviously the mids, you could pick any name out of that and say they're training unbelievably, do the same honestly for every line, like everyone's it's been awesome to see. So
yeah, I feel like it's when we try and go through the D's each preseason, we just go, they're just so consistent in their performances, it's really hard to figure out who's going to be different each year because it's just always so consistently solid.
Yeah, and I think that's the same as a player, and it just kind of inspires you to just like strive for consistency rather than individual accolades and things like that. I think at the end of the day, if you are consistent, you're adding to the team. So yeah, it's just huge, and a lot of the team are really bought in on that mindset as well.
Yeah. Well, we really appreciate having you on. It's been great chatting with you. I guess good luck for the season ahead.
Thank you very much, and good luck for the podcast.
Thank you.
So, yeah, that was a great interview. What did you most like about it?
Look, it was very tough to find a most enjoyable detail because that was about the straightest bat that I've ever listened to on an interview. Now, I have done another interview, which you'll hear later in this preseason, which may go down as good a forward defence. They maybe play for Brisbane. I don't know. It's a shock that Melbourne and Brisbane players might have the most media training. But I will say that Melbourne, of all clubs this year, we've probably heard the most in advance of any of the match sims about who's going to play where. So in terms of interviews, it's amazing to have a player of Eliza's background to come on, and given the injury that she had and the story that she's got, she's fascinating. But I also think that we've actually got a little bit to work with, maybe more than we've got for a lot of other clubs.
Yeah, we actually have heard quite a bit of news about who wants to play where in the preseason. So that plus Eliza's interview, quite helpful. I mean, that really leads us nicely into our number one most fantasy relevant player at the Demons.
Yeah, it's one of the ones where I probably wouldn't have said this was going to be the most relevant if you'd asked me about 4 or 5 weeks ago, but it's Taylor Harris. And that is because A, she is a forward. So she immediately ticks the box of in a position that we really struggle to find people in. And then B, it's because she's not going to play forward by the sounds of it. She's sounded like she's going to trial a new spot as an intercepting defender. I mentioned earlier that both Libby Birch and Maddie Gay, who've been extremely experienced players and have been defenders predominantly for the last two seasons, are both out from Casey and off to, I'm going to call it greener pastures, because Maddie Gay's gone to Essendon. But that's a large amount of experience that needs to get replaced, and they've decided that Taylor Harris is the player that's going to do it. Now, you could rightly say that both Birch and Gay are not particularly adept fantasy scorers as defenders, which maybe indicates that Melbourne is not the place for defenders to score well. I'll say a couple of things, though. First of all, Taylor is someone that probably is most natural mark of the players that we're talking about here. She's an excellent contested mark already, and already we know of her ability to read the ball because she's an incredible mark inside 50 as a forward. And it's pretty common knowledge in the football world that if you are able to read the ball well as a forward to take marks, you're probably going to be able to do as well, potentially even better as a defender. And then separately, I don't think Melbourne are going to be as good this year. And I think there's going to be more ball in their defense. And so it may be that Taylor Harris is someone that is not only tasked with being that intercepting third player up type of defender, but also to take kick-ins, which was something that Birch was doing last year. So I do think that there's upside, and particularly given where she's priced at, she's not exactly had a stellar year last year. So she's going to be priced below 50. I think that someone maybe who can average in that mid-60s, which is what we can expect for those kind of good intercepting defenders who are maybe not pure accumulators, I think that there's maybe enough upside there.
I agree largely, except that she is priced at 53. I do really like the idea that, close enough. I do really like the idea that you've got Melbourne are going to be putting one of the most experienced players. I mean, I haven't done the math on the top of my head, but like 60 plus games or something. So she knows what she's doing. There's a lot of young players that have come in that'll be hoping to rotate through that defense in those voids as well. So she can have a real leadership role, shine over there. The ball's going to be more there. This is all lining up for a good choice. The only concern, I guess, for me personally with like her price range is the 53 price stat is a little bit tricky, but I don't see any reason why that upside isn't going to eventuate.
No, I just think it's very much I like it on paper, but we haven't seen anything of it yet. And I think we probably do need to mention that she is nursing an injury, and so she wasn't part of the match simulation and actually spent some time overseas at the Olympics. So it's not a slam dunk that she'll walk straight into the side in round one. So it's not something that I feel very comfortable with. I'm not currently got her starting in my team, but it's a name and a role that I'll watch intently if she plays kind of round one, and I'll see if she does ultimately become like a really good player to pick.
The article that mentioned she was going to the Olympics also seemed very keen on her being back in time for that Brackey game. So I'm really hoping that we can get the assurance that we need this weekend and take that with us into the start of the season rather than having to like kind of watch for something in round one. That would be ideal, but we will have to see.
Yeah, agreed.
So number two, we've got last year's friend of the pod. Do love to see that.
Yes, we do. So number two is Liv Purcell. So you're going to sense a theme with the players that I'm picking from Melbourne. I've picked Liv Purcell because Eliza West is out. And that takes with it a decent amount of scoring, CBAs, but then also when you talk about the type of player that they both are, Eliza West was never a huge fantasy scorer. And that was almost certainly down to the fact she's a very handball dominant player. So she averaged just under 7 kicks, but nearly 10.5 hand passes per game. And then in season 7, she was 5.5 kicks to nearly 12 hand passes. I think that Liv Purcell is probably a more natural kick and hand pass player. She is a little bit handball happy. But I do think that if ever there were two players that were going to clash with each other in that midfield and steal points from each other, it was Liv Purcell and Eliza West. I think that what I do like from Liv Purcell is her ceiling. We know that she's got the capability to hit 100, and I think she hit a couple of 111s last season, which is seriously impressive. It's just that her inconsistency game to game was maddening if you were ever going to try and pick her for fantasy. So I think she followed up.
She has one of the biggest oscillations I've seen.
Yeah, I wish I had like average deviation week to week, but to go from 111 to 68 and have the week before be a 58 and then 111 in round two, she starts the season with 64 and then the week after 111 has 56 and then goes back to 105. It's just so hard to pick what type of score she's going to put up week to week. But I do think that there's something to be said for if there's someone who's going to improve by taking up a share of Eliza West scoring, I think Liv Purcell is probably the most natural option. And of the players that they've currently got in there, she's got comfortably the highest ceiling that we've seen. So she's can go that 110 plus score, which we don't really have elsewhere.
In Melbourne. Or just elsewhere at all.
Oh, elsewhere at Melbourne. Sorry. Yep. She's not the only person that can do that.
I was like, oh, that's a bit dramatic. Yeah, her fluctuations from two scores over 111, at 111, but then two under 50 as well, all within the same season. This is huge fluctuations. Huge fluctuations. Huge fluctuations in points per minute because she's had a pretty steady time on ground. It's just, like, it's not that. It's kind of the ability to get around the ball, and it doesn't seem to be correlated to good team, bad team. It's just massive random variations, which I don't like at all.
No, I don't love it. But it just says to me that, like, there clearly something is to be unlocked. And it might be that there's a stat that I'm missing. There's a player or a game plan change that I'm not seeing. And so it's going to be a key focus of me in the opening rounds of the season to try and figure out, like, what is going on that's affecting the scoring of some of these players, particularly their midfielders. But I do think that if I'm going to talk about fantasy relevance, Liv Purcell is actually quite hilariously 100% relevant. She's the best scorer in the midfielder still who's actually a full-time midfielder. And I think she might also be the lowest selected of players priced over a million. She's 1.002 million. She is the second lowest selection percentage of any player above that price, over $1 million. The only player with less is Ali Drennan, and it's a crime that they are both that low.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, I do see your point around the potential for her increased CBAs with Eliza West, because Eliza West didn't play round 11, and we saw correlation with Liv Purcell's CBAs increase. So I can see that as an argument coming into the season to increase the scoring. It's just a big mid-price risk madness call for number two.
It's a mid-price madness call where it could go really bad really quickly. It could end up costing like 200K, 250K in 2 weeks because you're forced to try and fix her up after a couple of bad scores. It's just, I couldn't go through this episode and say, like, who do I expect to get the biggest bump potentially from West scoring without talking about Purcell, given the ceiling.
I like to think about, like, where in your strategy some of these players could fit in. And this one to me is in the, oh, crap, I'm doing a lot worse than I thought I was going to do. I need to take a gamble. This is a player that can, if it's a possession, especially in that bye week, that would be great. But if it's like somewhere in the season, oh, she went low last week, maybe she'll get 50 points higher this week.
Yeah, 100%. Give it a crack. She's like a player you pick up in round 9 when you're like floundering and you need someone cheap. But I still think she's relevant to talk about, 100%.
Definitely. And number 3, someone else that's very relevant, we got the skipper.
We do have the skipper. So we've gone from someone with, you know, below 1% ownership to, I think she might be, so she's at 35% ownership, and that's Kate Hoare. And I struggled with all of these Melbourne players, but I don't think I struggled more with picking where to put Kate Hoare in the 1-5 ranking on relevance, because there are so many push-pull factors that are both positive and negative for her that it was almost impossible. That's why she's gone in the middle. I think we both know, and I know very acutely, that Kate Hoare has an insane ceiling and she can put up over 140 points in a game where she sits down for the last 9 minutes. And that was what she did in round 2 against GWS. On the other hand, she really had some down weeks in the back end of the season, particularly when Melbourne started to get figure out. So didn't have a score above 83 in her final 5 rounds of the season. And that included a 59 and a 63 in rounds 8 and rounds 10. Now, that's not ideal for someone that you're paying a smidge over $1.1 million for. The reason why you've got to entertain her is that of the premium forwards, she's currently the second highest averaging from last year, and we're really struggling to find ways to ensure that we're not going full hyper risk in our forward line. And so you sit there and you go, well, I've got a player who's the captain who gets a handful of CBAs, and you go, well, CBA players left. Do you reckon she's going to end up getting some more this season? And I do think there's a genuine possibility she spends some more time rolling through the midfield and she might get more points. On the other hand, they might need her to play forward more because they've just lost Taylor Harris, by the sound of it, in their restructure in order to be able to kick goals. And she's, you know, a leading goal scorer.
Yeah, Eliza was pretty cagey when Jono was trying to get that question out of her. You know, is she going to be needing to spend more time forward because Harris is out, or is she maybe going to be spending more time in the midfield? It was like, oh, we'll just see. We'll just see. So I guess we will indeed just see. But I think if she's spending more time forward, it is potentially a little bit questionable because of the just a potential lack of the ball being there as much because of Melbourne. But I still think she's a really strong pick as a forward in a line where we don't have that many elite options.
Yeah. I think the question for me will be one where if we see it in the preseason game over the weekend, it'll be amazing. You know, pick her, she's 100% full-time mid, and you just run the risk that it might not be incredible scoring, but it'll probably still be enough value in a horrible line. If it is a bit more forward, I think you can make the case that the Melbourne run for the first 3 weeks with Geelong, Brisbane and North, 3 incredibly tough fantasy matchups who haven't really had a whole lot of change in personnel themselves and will probably front up very similarly. I think you could wait 3 weeks and then look to pick her later in the season after she's got a little bit cheaper, given we know what her ceiling can be. And in the hope that Melbourne won't have suffered as much as we thought, and we'll have stabilised and we'll be able to put out a consistent game plan week to week.
Yeah, she's definitely another one on the watch and wait list. So looking at your number 4, this was an interesting name that I personally didn't start thinking about until we went to that match sim on Friday over at Icon Park. Tell me about your number 4.
Yes, my number 4 is another player. Well, I agree with you. I had not thought about her for one iota of 1 second, and that is Maeve Chaplin. So she's 427k defender. This will be the first season that she'll be fantasy relevant. She's never had any particularly big scores in the AFLW. I do believe that her highest ever score in fantasy is a 41 at AFLW level. Now, you could then reasonably ask, why in the ever-living is she on this list? And that is because she looked really good She looked to be the main distributor off halfback in the game against Carlton. And for a team that was really missing a replacement for Maddie Gay, I thought I saw the most Maddie Gay style stuff from Maeve than anyone else on that Melbourne team. Now, we know that there's going to be changes in structure, particularly when Taylor Harris plays. So this is a huge, huge asterisk on the relevance of this player. But given we've discussed the fact that we think Melbourne are going to be worse this year and the ball's going to spend more time in defence, and the fact that this is not a full-on rookie, but she's almost rookie priced, like she's 7K more than a rookie, and given I think she passed the eye test, it puts her smack bang on the I need to see some stats on what this player looks like, because she's that cheap. She could really rocket up in price, particularly with the quality of matchups that Melbourne have in the first few weeks and how much time the ball might spend in defence.
Yeah, I get all of your logic, and I do think she passed the eye test at the game because I don't have a particularly good memory, but I remember thinking about her at the game. And therefore she came up a couple of times, because it always takes us a few times to be like, what's that number? Who's that player? Oh, yeah, for the fifth time, it's Maeve Chaplin. So that's always a good sign. But there's too many what-ifs in this for me to believe it. The story and the probability assigned to each along the way, yeah, Melbourne aren't probably going to do as good, but how bad are they going to do? And then when we have Taylor Harris come into this role she's supposed to come into, that also weakens the probability. And then, like you said, she hasn't had great fantasy scoring in the past, so we need one of those two things to be quite strongly true in order for her to do better. I think it's a good name to know. I really, I think after that, because I mean, lots of people wouldn't be able to get to those match sims, so it was definitely a noteworthy thing to pick up there. But yeah, she's a question mark for me.
Oh, she's an absolute mega question mark. Several massive question marks. But I couldn't deny, I came away going, all right, she's now firmly on the watch list.
Yeah. And someone else who's probably on that same watch list for me, who have you got for number 5?
Yes, I have. And this is a player to replace Eliza West, another option, and that's Lil Mithen. So why am I picking her? I do believe that ultimately she's a prime candidate to replace Eliza West's time in the midfield. So this is Melbourne's CBA rotations where I would call them unique, because there were a lot of players kind of sitting at that 30, 40, 50, 60% mark. It was really spread far and wide. But Lil Mithen is someone that only averaged 25% CBAs last year. But most importantly, she's someone that's gone far higher in the past. So if you have a look at what she's done previously, she's had time where she was, I think, at 46% CBAs in season 6, and she averaged an 80. And this is someone that, and that's in shorter game time, so that doesn't get the 12% scaling. So that becomes closer to a 90 in today's numbers. I think that this is someone who definitely has the experience, if that's what Melbourne are looking to try and consolidate close to the ball. We know that she's an integral part of their ball movement, but in the last two seasons, her previous ceiling has really been stunted. She's still not, like, you know, a particularly old player. She's in the prime of her career. And I do believe that if Melbourne are going to try and succeed, it will need to be on the back of a kind of reinvigoration in form for someone like Lil Mith. And I do believe that she's a firm candidate to spend more time in the midfield. And if she's spending 50% as a dedicated CBA player, as opposed to a wing or someone rolling up off half forward, I expect her to see some better scoring. Whether or not it's going to be enough to justify picking her, I'm unsure. I'd probably lean towards no, but I think it would be unwise to scratch her off completely, because I do think that a player that can, you know, put up some really, so she was 1.5 points per minute in that season 6 where she averaged 80. She had a max score of 117. So it's good points per minute numbers. It's a good ceiling. It's just, do we need to see the role?
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, we unfortunately didn't quite get to see in the match sim where she was pretty much on the half forward. So back in kind of her season 8 role.
Half forward and wing. But it didn't feel like Melbourne's best CBA group were really being thrown in that much. I didn't get a sense that Melbourne were putting their best foot forward.
Oh, you mean in a goalless half? maybe Melbourne weren't putting their best foot forward. I don't think they played the first half of the game.
I thought they actually looked terrible, and they made Carlton's ball movement look incredible, which, if we go off last season, is hard to do.
Yeah, I out of your two kind of Eliza West potentials, even though she's a bit more 10 points higher average, I think I like the Liv Purcell option a little bit more. I see the Lily Mithen potential if she can go back to her scoring from 2-3 seasons ago, even though she's coming into her ninth season now. It is there, but I guess the whole thing with Melbourne is it's tricky to pick five fantasy relevant players when we've got a whole bunch of totally unknowns, and then some players that have, yeah, they've been there for quite a while. And do we expect their role to change that much? Do we expect to see something totally different from them after so long? Yeah, not too sure. Your points do make sense, but to me it fits in that same bucket of like, it's quite a few things that need to be true for me to buy it. But I like it as one to watch as well. It's interesting to me though that in the interview, even asking about, the name has slipped my mind. Oh, Alyssa Pisano. It doesn't necessarily sound like she's someone that's going to make an impact early. And that was kind of really the only rookie we heard a little bit about of their five, which is devastating because we look at like where the rookies go and hope that at least one of them is going to be someone we can put as fantasy relevant, breakout potential. We've got so many at Melbourne and it's tough to see whether any of them are going to... Yeah, definitely none of them are a lock, I would say, but they're all very firmly on the watch and wait label.
Yeah, 100%. I'd love to say, yeah, Pisano at pick five is like locked into a great role, but we didn't get anything out of Eliza and I didn't see anything in the match simulation. So it's going to we're going to have to, you know, trust our eyes after some match after the practice match and hope we pick it right for starting sides.
Hmm. Yeah, and reading between the lines, it's almost like she's definitely not starting. Who knows? Who knows? Watch and see for just Melbourne.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, I thought, you know what? We've had a bit of mid-price madness in the midfield. Let's do some more.
Let's do it again. Let's reprise. Let's
triple down on Melbourne's mid-price madness. And I'm going to go with Shelley Heath. This is a similar logic behind your Maeve Chaplin call, which is pass the eye test in the match sim. It's also a little bit on stats. She played all of her games last season, but she really came out with a bang in round one, where she got a 94. So based on that logic, let's see if she can hit the ground running again, because she definitely did in that match sim. She was you could tell she was a really key part. When Melbourne started playing in the second half, she was the player that's really like driving that ball forward with her speed, running straight down the midfield, pretty much unstoppable there. I definitely like that role about her. Reasons why I think she can increase her average as well. 1.14 points per minute in the finals game with 58% CBAs. That's great. And 11 tackles. So she's got the skills.
11 tackles, I do love.
I do like that. But the problem here is that her CBA attendance is ranging from 0 to often 50, occasionally up to 90, but lots of games where it's just not there at all. It doesn't seem like it's that correlated either with games. So she's really a combination of everything you've said so far, because we get the Liv Purcell fluctuations and we get the ceilings. But yeah, I'm really just compiling all of that with the additional look of the match sim.
Mm-hmm. That's about as good as we've got for Melbourne. This has been one of the toughest ones to analyse.
Oh, but yes, I was like, there was one other point I wanted to make. I was like, there's some kind of red flag here. No spicy flag chat from me today, unfortunately. I'm not very prepared. But Melbourne have Brisbane in round two, and Brisbane is a tough matchup for mids, but it also was a tough matchup for Shelley last year. Not really one of those games 44. Where she went big. Yeah, and with a price stat of 51, that's probably not what you want for a mid-price madness that you bring in early in a season where we really need our trades. So I think that she's a name to watch for... This is me putting her into a strategy in my head. Name to watch for potential upgrade after when Melbourne have some of those good matchups. And especially if you see her kind of explosiveness early in some of these games, then she could be a pick that's going to increase her average by a chunk.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better myself. I love the tackles. I don't love the changeability of her CBA role. And she's super, super risky. So she will sit firmly in the, I will watch to see how you go. But I don't know if Melbourne are going to be the most fruitful fantasy team for us this year.
I like how you then proceeded to say what I said better by taking out about 5 minutes of the waffle after saying you couldn't say it better.
Sorry.
Thank you for that. That's a great summary. No, it's good.
Sorry, I'm not trying to like rehash your arguments completely. It's just like, yeah, that's basically it.
Yep, and that is a summary that holds true to pretty much most of the Melbourne players in terms of fantasy relevancy. So that's a good wrap-up for the entire episode.
Yeah.
We are getting to the pointy end of our pre-season club review episodes. I believe there's only a handful left, so stick around for those. You can find our best 21s on Insta and Twitter, as well as the episodes wherever you get your podcasts on both the Free Kick stream and... Every now and then, some of our episodes will be on the AFLW Fantasy stream for more of our line reviews. If you would like to listen to your podcast on YouTube, please go ahead and do that, as well as like, comment, and subscribe. Our relatively new YouTube page. I haven't checked the stats recently, but I'm hoping we're up to more than 2 views.
They
on
are.
Our
they are up. We have more than single digit views on a handful of videos.
Wow, that's more than I could ask for. Yeah, so lots more content coming in the pre-season, even though the season's starting soon, which is quite exciting. We will chat to you all later.
See ya.